Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, social critic, and mentor. Navigating the messy art of living and the complex beauty of relationships through these conversations that we all need to have but often shy away from. It's another Tuesday and time for a conversation with the reluctant therapist. Where are we off to today, Elizabeth?
Today, Brad, we are stepping into National Women's History Month, and that's pretty exciting.
It is exciting.
Because throughout history, women have done remarkable things that go unnoticed and unrecognized. And so we have this like short period of time every year where we actually get to elevate the experiences or the contribution, is that correct, of women. And, you know, I don't know if you know the history of International Women's Day, but it began in 1911 to mark the worldwide recognition of women's contributions to economic, political, and social efforts in the world. And then jump ahead a few decades. In 1978, there was a week-long celebration that was held at a school district in Sonoma, California, of all places.
Wow.
And so they had this week-long exhibitions. They had parades downtown, and they had pictures of women who had, you know, created their part of the world. And it was so popular and, you know, went on for multiple years. The idea started to spread nationally. People got excited about it. You know, let's move from just one day to a whole week. So in 1980, because I have to back up, because 1911, it was International Women's Day. That's how we all started. We got one big day on March the 8th. And it continues to exist, March the 8th. So with the efforts of the Sonoma School District and then kind of the national interest in it, it became a whole week of celebrating women. And that was proclaimed by Jimmy Carter.
Yay.
And then, yay. And then 6 years later, Congress was nudged to say, well, why not go for a whole month? And so in 1987, Congress created or mandated or proclaimed that March would be National Women's History Month. And then within that, we have International Women's Day. And every year there is a different theme for International Women's Day or Women's History Month. And this year's theme is Moving Forward Together, Women Educating and Inspiring Generations. So the highlights, the women they're highlighting this year, are those women who have dedicated their lives to education, mentorship, and leadership that shape the minds and futures of all generations. That's kind of exciting.
It is exciting. As somebody who has seen many strong women in my life, it's exciting to see them be honored and to recognize all of the wonderful contributions that women make every single day.
Absolutely. And it's interesting, they were marking the accomplishments over the last year. And one of the accomplishments was that the gender wage gap had actually gone up by 0.01%. That women now make between, instead of just 68.5% of on every dollar that a man makes, it's now 68.6. So we're going to hang a banner for that one. But in honor of, you know, national, international, there's so many internationals and nationals, we'll say Women's History Month. I always want to promote one of my favorite places in the United States, and it's the Women's Hall of Fame in Seneca Falls, New York. And I know I bring it up often and you can shake your head, but until everybody goes and sends me a postcard, I'm going to continue reminding you that it really is the most... besides Montgomery, Alabama, which is a whole nother show, but besides that, Seneca Falls, New York was one of the most inspiring experiences I've ever had as a person in the United States. Maybe because I love upstate New York so much as well. But to go into this museum, this Hall of Fame, which was the ground zero of the women's suffragist movement in the United States. It's where Lucretia Mott and Elizabeth Cady Stanton first met with 100 other people and had a convention and signed the Declaration of Sentiments with Frederick Douglass there as well, supporting the women's movement. And you have to think about how revolutionary this was, because women weren't allowed to speak in public. They had to get special permission, and then they had to find a place that would allow a woman to actually speak in public. And so it was a Presbyterian church that allowed it, and that meeting room is there. And so, and also that Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Lucretia Mott met each other at an abolitionist convention in England, and they were there, right, trying to end slavery. And they said, you know, when we get back to the United States and we've ended slavery, we need to do something about our right to vote and have a say in, you know, our future. And they both agreed that would be great, but they didn't live near each other. But then, twist of fate, Lucretia Mott's family moves to Seneca Falls, New York, of all places. And there's where Elizabeth Cady Stanton is, and they come together and create this whole foundation. It's such a phenomenal story, and the museum is beautiful, and it's just story after story after story of women and the amazing things they've done throughout history. And also to remind us that the women's suffragist movement was the only bloodless revolution in the history of mankind, that it came about from 1848 to 1920 when they passed the right to vote, women's right to vote. Bloodless revolution, but women standing up against what they were told they could not do, which was be out in public, demonstrating, protesting. They quietly went on hunger strikes. They quietly stood outside the White House with signs and just persevered for multiple generations, because we're going 1848 to 1920 before this was passed. And so it was the second wave of these suffragists, was their daughters who were there for the signing. It's just, it's profound. Clearly you can tell it moves me, which is why this month feels so important, because it's these subtle things that women do quietly over and over again that have made deep, significant changes in the quality of life for all people, especially women and children and families. And when we talk about what we care about as a country, doesn't it always fall back on women and children and families?
Always.
Like, that's our most important thing. And yet, it's only been revolutions led by women that have actually improved the life of women and children. So that's why this is important to me, to make sure that we mark this every year. And it's not enough, because, you know, I have a real thing about Mother's Day. Like, I don't like the Mother's Day thing where it's like, oh, Mom, thanks for sacrificing your entire life for me so I could always be comfortable. Here's some roses. Like, I mean, that's nice. But really what we should be paying attention to is how women, yes, do the Mother's Day thing and sacrifice our lives in many ways to support our families and children, and also quietly stand in a picket line to ensure the quality of life for everyone else, not just our families, but for everyone else's family and everyone else's opportunity. So, oh, by all means, don't stop sending me flowers on Mother's Day, but please do not think you can pat me on the head and say I exist just for your benefit, but that I exist for your benefit and I am able to also kick some ass everywhere else in my life. And that's the women's history, right? If we're talking about women moving forward together, if we're celebrating the women who are educating and inspiring generations through mentorship and education, that's the power that we have. And it's bloodless. We're not having to send weapons to make sure that the quality of life for all people is better than before. And that's what women do. Oh, man, my soapbox is slippery today.
But you're making some great points.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So in honor of Women's History Month, I have invited two guests to the studio. And this is kind of a personal journey as well, not just because we want to celebrate the achievement of women, but I have a history with one of the women for Women's History Month. And I don't know if I want to share it now or if I should wait. It's a big surprise reveal. But I'm going to say that they are a woman-owned business in town. They have worked together. They have been doing their work since 1976. Mother-daughter team. So daughter probably not since 1976. But if we were going to get really weirdly biologically graphic, she was there with her mom. She just wasn't born yet. Because we carry the future of all generations within our bodies if we want to go there as well. I remind my granddaughter often, you know, I carried you first because I had your mom. But I want to talk about this because in 1980, my husband and I started dating. So I was 19. And you're going to be hearing a lot of it because it's our 40th wedding anniversary in May. So I'm going to be really annoying about how proud I am of us.
Congratulations. That Thank is you. Awesome.
Well, save it because you have to say it a lot.
I'll say it as many times as I need to because it is.
Thank you. So we started dating 45 years ago. And I was at UC Santa Barbara and he was at Cal Poly. And so I spent a lot of time here and made friends. We had our best friends, Sam and Kirsten, that we hung out with all the time. Like that year, I will still say that year, 1980, that we started dating feels like 20 years long because so much happened. And one of the things that happened is there was a little store downtown off Hygera called Up Your Alley. And they had really fun clothes. So this shop had really fun clothes. But my best friend Kirsten and I would go downtown and we'd mill around and we'd hang out at this shop because I just love clothes so much. And so we were there all the time. And so for many, many years after my husband and I got married, I would pop into Up Your Alley. Now, the woman who owned the shop, Laura, who is our guest today and is already crying, so this can be a long hour, didn't know me from Adam, but she was very important to me because I loved going in there. And then, as I've mentioned on the show before, my best friend Kirsten was killed in a car accident my senior year of college. And so going to Up Your Alley became kind of this visiting of my memories of being with Kirsten. And I would walk in the shop and the way it smelled, all of a sudden I was with Kirsten again. And so that memory has been so important for me. And in 2002, Laura's daughter Natalie opened Apropos and continued that same wonderful vibe and the smell. And so I would go in there and again, never said anything, but I would just kind of remember Kirsten and have my moments of, I loved her so. And it wasn't until a couple years ago that I actually told Laura my story. It's like, you have a really profound part of my story of my life, just seeing you in the store, feeling my space here. And I want you to know that I appreciate that, that I appreciate you because you carry a part of my history that is really dear to me. So I wanted to invite them and went to just remind Laura how much I love her and Natalie, but also because they're a woman-owned business. They're a family-owned business, and they together have created this way to sustain their family successfully since 1976. And if we're going to talk about women mentoring women and sustaining, you know, for families, then I wanted them to come in and talk about how they do that, because it's hard to have a family business. It's hard to work with your family and to do it for multiple decades. And many people would actually benefit if they did combine resources and work as a family. But how do you do it? So that's kind of where I am today. And I'm going to open up the phone lines as well, because our theme is going to be a dressing for success and how what we wear and what we put on makes us feel like we can go out and protest for our rights, stand in front of the White House in my 1880s outfit and just quietly be there, because you feel powerful when you're wearing something that represents how you feel. So we're going to open up the phone lines because I'd love people to call in and talk about what their power outfit is, what makes them feel powerful when they strap that clothing on. So this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And you can be part of the conversation by sending me an email after the show to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can follow us on Instagram or Facebook. You can leave me messages there. I have a beautiful picture of Natalie and Laura today. You can also listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org or podcast our show if you'd like. Anywhere you get podcasts, look for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, and please leave a review. That'd be fabulous so more people can find us. And then, as always, you can call us sometime this hour. We will open up the phone lines at 805-781-3875. So we're going to take a quick break, come back, and start our conversation with Natalie and Laura right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
And just a quick program note, of course, if you're a longtime listener of KCBX, Apropos has been a longtime supporter and sponsor of Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Let's get glam. Let's get glam. 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 Let's get glam.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And welcome to my guests, Natalie Reisner and Laura Bjorklund. They are the co-owners of Apropos. So thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's both a little anxious.
Wonderful to be here. I'm a little bit emotional. Yeah.
Do you remember me?
Sure, of course I do. I do remember those days. It's wonderful. I wish I could go back there. You know?
Mm-hmm. I know. Time goes really fast, doesn't it? 45 years?
Just so fast.
My goodness.
Yeah, really tough.
So was it always your intention to own a business? Did you know you were a businesswoman?
No, I did not.
So how did you come to find yourself owning a business?
Well, I just followed my little sister here to go to college at Cal Poly, and she left, and I ended up staying, and I never finished school, but I married Natalie's dad and needed to have a job, and so I just opened the store on a whim. Yeah.
Did you just love clothing, or why did you choose?
I always loved clothing, but I was working at the dry cleaners, and I didn't like that job very much. Yeah.
And so what was it like? What was it like opening a business in 1976?
1976, yeah.
Were you able to get a loan on your own, or did you need your husband to co-sign?
My dad gave me $20,000 to open the store, and it was really sweet of him because back then that was a lot of money.
Yes.
Yeah. And the store did really well, and I remember going in there and remodeling the store myself with a hammer and nails because I didn't have anybody. Anyway, I paid him back within 10 months. So it was amazing. I was very proud of myself.
Yes. Yeah. And it's interesting because I was doing some, you know, research prepping for the show on family-owned, women-owned businesses and, you know, how – because for many years, women couldn't get a loan themselves. They had to – their husband had to co-sign.
Exactly.
Right.
Absolutely.
So it wasn't really until the 70s, after the second wave of feminism, that women were even allowed to go in and get a mortgage or a business loan. So you were kind of on the cutting edge.
I was lucky that my dad was able to do that for me because I wouldn't have been able to do it without some kind of a support.
Absolutely.
I certainly didn't have the money. You know?
Yeah. And so in my research, I found that there's many, many studies that have supported that when women are given access to loans to start a business or grow a business, it significantly benefits the entire family. Different than when men have access to loans, they don't tend to reinvest that money in their family the way that women do. Mm-hmm. So it significantly improves the economic stability for families because women tend to invest more in family needs when managing finances than men do. And they also said in the study that women tend to pay back their loans much more quickly than men do and in full. And women tend to, when they have control of the finances, allocate money for food, housing, education, and health care for their children more often than men do. And that women, when they have access to money, tend to share their money with the entire family more fairly than men tend to do. So it's fascinating. And another one of the studies said that in the United States, low to moderate income two-parent households children are less likely to experience food insecurity when their parents' pooled income was controlled by their mother rather than their father.
That's interesting.
Mm, wow. I know. So what does that say then about encouraging women to start businesses?
Well, I don't know. For me, it was really a blessing because I got to have my two children, and I raised them in the store.
Did you?
I had a crib in the back room. They came to work with me every day. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so looking back now, anything you would have done differently?
Gosh, no. It was a wonderful ride.
Yeah. And then did you fall in love with clothes as you built the business?
Yes, I've my first love's always been horses.
Oh, okay.
My second love's always been clothes. So it was an easy thing for me to fall into.
And there has to have been some part of you, too, that also loves antiques and vintage items.
I do. I love that. Absolutely. Yeah.
So do you have a collection at home?
Oh. It's frightening. Someday I'll have you over if
yes,
you want to
come. Yes, please. I
want
to come.
That. I would love that.
Because I love fashion because I love seeing what people choose to wear every day. Mm-hmm. Because my closet I think of as my costume shop. Uh-huh. And so when I'm going to teach every day going like, what costume am I going to wear for my students today? Because I try to wear something that's going to keep their attention. Mm-hmm. And so then I'm always fascinated when I see what other people choose to wear, you know, right. for what other events. So when you look at your closet, what do you look for first? Are you comfort, style, flowers?
Well, I don't know. At this point in my life, being 76, I dress a lot differently than I used to. I'm my body's changed a lot, and I have health issues, so I don't dress like I used to. But I used to love to get dressed up to come to work, and I really believe that women need to love themselves, and what they're wearing is really important for their self-image.
And also, you said a key thing that it should change, maybe, our fashion sense as we get older.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
Because there's things in my closet I would really like to wear, mm-hmm. but I think my children would be embarrassed.
Me too.
And so, Natalie, you Up Your Alley closed in 2001, and then in 2002, mm-hmm. From your bio.
Yeah.
You looked at me like, is that a...
Yeah.
You opened... Apropos, or did you open it together with your mom?
I went to school up in San Francisco at the Fashion Institute, was done and decided that San Francisco I love, but I didn't want to live there forever. So I decided to move back. My husband and I, we came back and got married, and then decided, well, I'm going to need a job, and wouldn't it be fun to open up a store with my mom. And there was a great spot on Moreau Street that was available, and we decided to let's try it and see, and focus on having some clothing that for all women. Mm-hmm. That's always been a philosophy. It's like, just be, you know, whatever size you are, you should be able to find something that you feel good in, mm-hmm. and you feel like, you know, it's fashionable and timeless. And
so where did you study when you went to the Fashion Institute? Were you planning on being a designer?
No, I was never a designer. I went to school for merchandising and marketing.
Ah, so this kind of works. This was up your alley. Your mom's
story. Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Up Your Alley. I worked as a teenager, I think everyone should work retail at some point in their life. I think it's really brings, like, it's almost like a learn about how people are.
Oh, interesting. Because you're working with the public?
Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like it's just a lesson in humanity, working in the public.
Because and humility as well.
Yeah. Because you're just, you know, you're there in the store or wherever you are working retail, and you're at the mercy of whoever walks in the
that
door
is true.
And what mood they're in, and you have to learn how to deal with it. So I feel like it's a good lesson in just life. Really.
So how has it been for you running a business?
I am very grateful for my life. I love being a part of downtown. San Luis is a great town, and being part of the community. People come in and say, oh, I remember when you were a baby and up
your house. Yes, that must be really interesting,
and,
right?
And then I did the same. I had I have two girls and brought them every day and had them sleeping in the stroller and were wrapped up in the little snuggly. And mm-hmm. and they, you know, were part of the store and were part of the fabric of the community is what it feels like.
And what is it like then for the two of you to have a family-owned business? How has that been for your relationship or just?
I think it's really great. I'm really blessed. I get to hang out with my mom every day.
Yeah.
Sometimes I can talk my daughters into coming to work.
They're fabulous in that too. But I really, it's really Natalie's store now. I just am there with Natalie because I want to be. It's fun for me. But it really is Natalie's business. Yeah.
That's very kind of you.
Oh, it's true.
If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guests today are Natalie and Laura, the two women who run Apropos. And we're talking about fashion and how it feels to look forward to actually getting dressed in the morning, and also what it's like to work in a family business. I love this kind of intergenerational thing that you grew up in the store, and I, the girls grew up in the store. Because I taught tennis lessons, was one of my first jobs when my mm-hmm. girls were little. And I would bring the playpen to the tennis court between the two courts I was teaching on.
Yeah.
And so balls would just be whizzing over their heads. But I loved taking them there. And then when I started doing radio, I'd always because, and again, not that dads don't take their children to work, but they had to make a whole take your daughter to work day so that men would take their daughters. But I think that's the story for a lot of women, that they've bundled up their kids. I know that my daughter, you know, has been taking my daughter, my sister, sixth generation pencil women, have been taking their kids to work and play pens and dolls while they're trying to get things done. And I think it's so innate in being a woman, I think.
Absolutely. I agree. We just make it work.
Yes. And without really thinking about it.
No. It's like, well, of course I'm going to bring them with me. And I feel so lucky that I got to do that in my job. I got to have my kids with me, you know, nonstop for the first few years of their life.
How does it feel? How have you changed since you've owned a business, since it really wasn't what you started out to intend to do?
That's a good question. I think that it gives you a lot of independence, which is it's also really hard to have your own business. It's a lot of stress, but it has the benefits that I think outweigh the cons. It's empowering to have your, you know, and feel like you are making a difference, hopefully, in people's lives. That's probably like the most gratifying thing about working at a clothing store for women is having someone come in upset and need something for maybe a special event, or maybe they just need a new pair of jeans because they don't have any that fit, and to find something that they feel good in and they leave like, yes, I feel so good. I'm going to get to wear these tomorrow. That feels like, oh, that, you know, that I got accomplished what I needed to today.
Yeah. It's like your job is something that feeds other people,
yeah,
in a sense that they can't get anywhere else. Because let's admit, haircuts and clothes are two of the most important things for our self-esteem and well-being. True?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. It's like, feels like new, fresh. Like, there's a reason they call it retail therapy.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
It's for real.
Like, yeah.
The season changes and you're like, everything feels stale in my closet. I need a couple new things. But, you know, we want our clothes that are really high quality and they're going to last for years. Maybe you don't need a whole new wardrobe, but a few new pieces every season just freshens it up and makes it like, you know, you're excited to wear something and feel good. And when you feel good, then it shows in your life.
Everything falls into place.
Absolutely.
My mother has been the same size her whole life. And so she has clothes from the beginning of time, from her time, that she's just had re-altered. She is, you know, a person who can, a tailor, to keep it updated for every generation. And you would love her closet, Laura, because it is this timeless collection of things that lasted a lifetime. I mean, she's 84 right now, and she's been wearing since she was young. But it's also tasteful and tastefully done. So I would imagine that that would be your hope, is that people have a closet of well-made things that they just keep kind of tailoring and updating.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we really believe that. Good quality and things that are going to make you feel good for a long time. Yeah.
So what's the oldest item of clothing that you have that you've kept forever and ever and can't let go of?
Well, some of my mother's dresses, you know. But then I have things from high school still, too. But I'm lucky I have a really big closet. Seriously, when my kids moved out, I lived in the same house for 45 years, and I converted one of the small bedrooms into a closet, so it really is a big closet.
That is nice.
Yeah, it's ridiculously big. And so most of the things I don't wear, they're just mementos, you know.
Right, because you can remember the time and place that you wore that.
It's so hard to get rid of. You just can't do it.
It's absolutely true.
And I'm lucky I don't have to yet. Poor Natalie, when check out, it's going to be tough. Yeah.
No downsizing yet.
Yeah, right.
If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and I'm here with Natalie and Laura from Apropos, and we're kind of talking family business and women being empowered and how fashion can help us feel strong and wonderful. And we'd love to have you be a part of the conversation as well. Our number is 805-781-3875. What's your power go-to outfit? What is it you like to put on that every time you put that on, you know that you're mighty? Because I have a couple things that I'm willing to share as well. 805-781-3875. We're going to take a quick break, come back, and continue our conversation and take your calls right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
If a custom-tailored vet asked me out for something wet. When the vet begins to pet, I cry hooray. But I'm always true to you, darling, in my fashion. Yes, I'm always true to you, darling, in my way. I've been asked to have a meal by a big tycoon in steel. If the meal includes a deal, accept I may. But I'm always true to you, darling, in my fashion. Yes, I'm always true to you, darling, in my way. There's an oil man known as Tex, who is keen to give me checks. And his checks, I fear, means that Tex is here to stay. But I'm always true to you, darling, in my fashion. Yes, I'm always true to you, darling, in my way.
And just a program note here today, our guests on this conversation with the Reluctant Therapist are from Apropos Women's Clothing Boutique. And if you are a longtime listener of KCBX, you know they are longtime sponsors as well. And with that, let's return to this conversation with Elizabeth and her guests. Back to you, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Brad. All right. So phone lines are now officially open. What is that power outfit or piece that you love to put on, you always feel ready to go? 805-781-3875. Right now, Natalie, my current piece is this. It looks something like out of a rock and roll groupie's closet. It's like this really kind of furry, fuzzy white coat that I put on. And I can feel myself when I walk across campus. I know that everyone's kind of looking over. It's like, yeah, this is a cool coat. I feel good. And I'm ready for the day.
Nice.
So what's something in your closet that you go, I'm going to put this on and feel good?
Yeah, that's a hard question. I kind of go through phases of wearing things. I'll wear something and wear it until I like kind of hit the wall and have to put it away for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But lately I've been really enjoying wearing a blazer, just with either black pants or denim. But when I'm getting dressed up, I do have a velvet coat that came to mind.
Yes.
That is a really beautiful, deep wine-colored velvet coat. Mm-hmm. That I bought, I think, right when we first got married,
How long ago was that?
23 years or something. And it's just a beautiful, like, kind of looks like a vintage piece that I'll have forever. And when I put it on, it feels very vintage, which I love.
I would love that, too. I've always actually coveted a velvet coat, but I have not been able to find one that kind of fits what I see in my mm-hmm. mind's eye, what it's going to look like.
Yeah.
But I love those as well. All right. What about you, Laura? What is something that makes you feel beautiful?
Well, that's really a hard question because my wardrobe fluctuates by what we've got in the store.
Okay.
As a retailer, that's really what I live for is, you know. And so I have all these wonderful pieces, but they really don't get out to air very often because I'm usually just wearing what's currently in the store.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's
mm-hmm.
good.
But I do the blazer thing like Natalie. And it makes me feel professional that way, and it's a good little – I think blazers are great for women.
Well, and it's interesting because, again, kind of preparing for the show, I was looking for – and I really want to give credit to my intern, Isabel, did some research about what fashion and clothing does for people. And there were actually, again, quite a few studies that showed how important our appearance is in our status in society. Like in some things you would expect that the way we dress has a huge role in our social dynamics because it's a statement what we're wearing. So people look at us and make judgments about who we are by what it is that we wear. And then clothing is also kind of connected in some ways, symbols of your status, your social class, your wealth, your success. And there were some studies that try to suggest that it's not the same, that things have changed and become much more casual over the last 30 or 40 years. And I'll ask you about that as well. But interestingly, the study said, although socially the idea of fashion has changed a bit over the last 30, 40 years, right? They expect expectations of business, you know, clothing and business casual, that although society has said it's okay to wear pajamas on an airplane, which is another show, the way people are judged by those clothing choices have not changed. You know what I'm saying? Is that
absolutely.
Although people can do that and do that, it doesn't mean that they're not being judged for not wearing clothing that represents the occasion.
Yeah.
I don't know if that
I
makes
hope
sense.
That's true. I hope that, and I think that's right, and I hope it's true.
Well, so one mm-hmm. of the studies, because they talked about how, you know, uniforms are very important. You wouldn't want your doctor to come in his pajamas, you know, wearing that white coat really has a lot to do with people's confidence in the person's authority. And then another thing with uniforms with, you know, police officers or firemen, there's something about that status. Mm-hmm. But they said also in workplace, and there was a whole study just on schools. And part of the study looked at how students perceive the intelligence and academic achievement of their professors and their instructors by the clothing that they wear. So yay for my costume closet of clothing.
Yeah.
But then the other part of the study showed that teachers judge the scholastic ability and intelligence of their students by what it is they wear to school.
That's fascinating, really.
Yeah.
And that quite often the level of education or attention students get is directly related to their appearance.
Yeah. Yeah. I know I have a high schooler and I hear her say that kids just kind of don't really care. And a lot of them just go to school in their pajamas almost. And I don't think she likes it. She thinks she definitely has opinions about it.
Yeah.
And she makes an effort to get dressed every day. And it's. I think we feel better if we have an intentional thought about what we're wearing. And
that has a meaning in some way.
Yeah, or just looks tidy and isn't – I think it's good for your confidence and it feels good. I mean, maybe you're really comfortable in your pajamas, but mm-hmm. you could also feel kind of, you know
– disheveled.
Disheveled, yeah, exactly. And just – it's not going to present well.
Well, and it's – it also is interesting because – you know, easily you could say, well, that's kind of a privileged thing because a lot of people can't afford, you know, to get clothes or their children can't afford the clothing. But it really didn't say about the quality of the clothing. It was kind of the neatness in the way it was presented. And I think it's also why it's so important every we have these drives, you know, to fundraisers so that kids can go to the store and buy clothes for back to school. Like that to me says, yeah, it still does matter because there's a lot of importance put on making sure kids get to have their back to school outfits so that they can feel good when they go to school.
That makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
I think that's really important,
For them to feel like they're ready for their day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the last two studies, one was about first impressions in hiring, that the applicants' clothing that they wore to their interviews impacted their decision, the decision of the company to hire or not hire the individuals. And it's interesting in social psychology that first impressions are so huge that 55% of attraction to another person is based on how the person carries themselves. So what they're wearing, their stature, how they move. It's not about looks immediately. It's not about their intelligence immediately. It's actually 55% is how people carry themselves. And as you mentioned, what we wear can really help determine how we feel about ourselves. So that's something to really consider, that we're out in the world. If 55% is our body language and how we carry ourselves, getting dressed matters. And just side note, only 7% is what you say, whether or not you are deemed intelligent or not. And then the other, I can't remember the other amount, is 38% is on your tone of voice.
Wow.
Wow.
That's fascinating.
Really interesting.
I'm just a little fountain of research right now today.
You really are. Wow.
So put this into perspective for me, Natalie. How have you seen this play out when people come to the store looking for a way to get dressed that makes them feel good, powerful, beautiful?
Well, a lot of times people will walk in that I hear a lot like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not in, you know, dressed well to be shopping. And I always try to say, it's okay. You know, I'm not, this isn't the job interview.
Yeah, like, exactly.
We've got lots of clothes. So, you know, I don't like, I think, generations ago, that used to be definitely a norm.
You get dressed up to go shopping.
You better be mm-hmm. dressed to go to the wherever department store, you know, and look very, you know, look like you're maybe to have them not judge you and think that maybe you can't afford it. Or,
but I remember the scene in Pretty Women.
Right.
Pretty Woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
But I mean, personally, I really don't. I really try not to judge a book by its cover.
Tell me a success story of someone who's come in looking for something that you were able to find the perfect thing.
Yeah, I have. I mean, it happens. It's happened many times over the years. I've had women come in looking for a special outfit for maybe a wedding or, a special event. Maybe they have a job interview. Mm-hmm. I need some things, and it's like important to just listen to them, and that's what we're there for, listen and find things that are going to fit their body. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not the trend of the day, mm-hmm. but as long as I think it's important for people to remember that and remember that it's not about what's trendy. It's about what works for you mm-hmm. and what makes you feel good. And if you put something on and you're excited to wear it the next day, then it's something you should probably get. I definitely had people leave very happy with a bag full of clothes because their wardrobe has just been updated and they were feeling really bad about themselves. And it's, important. That's the most gratifying.
I bet for your job to see someone leave.
Just to see someone really happy And then maybe they come back in 6 months.
They come back and talk to you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and they're ready for another little, boost. I need some more because this is working for me.
If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. What is your go-to favorite outfit or piece of clothing to put on? 805-781-3875. And my guests are Natalie Reisner and Laura Bjorklund from Apropos. All right. So the other thing that's challenging, because I have a lot of friends who will say, I just don't know what to put on. Like, I don't know how to dress my body. And so they don't go shopping or they don't look for anything because it feels so overwhelming because there are the fashion trends that don't always suit everyone. And there's, it's confusing. So can you give a couple of tips like for people who just don't even know where to start? What's a good piece to look for? I mean, you mentioned
good
blazers.
Fitting. Something that fits good. The pants are important because everybody wears pants now. Nobody wears skirts or dresses hardly, just for every day. And if you have a good fitting pair of pants and then some cute tops, you're just all set. That's just the way our world is.
I think going in shopping with a very open mind is my advice. Don't shoot something down as soon as the person that's trying to help you is suggesting, because you might be surprised. Mm-hmm. There might be something that you look at it and go, oh, that's not for me. And then they try it on. I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't know. That definitely happens a lot. Keep an open mind and try lots of things and you'll find something that's perfect.
Will you tell someone if you don't think what they have on looks good?
I will.
You will?
I will.
Okay.
I'll say, hey, you know what? Let's try this.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. I mean, maybe
that's okay, but let's try this.
But if they, if they absolutely love it, great. You have fun with that, But I think it's great to just, have some other suggestions. I will if I don't think. But my opinion is my opinion, and that person is the most important thing, I think.
True, but I'm sure you've had the same experience that you'll be at a store trying things on and the salesperson, no matter what you put on, goes, that looks great.
That's not good.
Then you lose your confidence because you're not really sure if whether or not you do look good. And then you get home and you think, oh, that's not good. Our number is 805-781-3875. And Barbara, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind today?
Hi. I just want to say, I'm getting an echo. Laura and Natalie are two of my favorite people. Aww. And the favorite store where I've found work clothes for teaching at Cal Poly used to be a little more suity looking, especially at the beginning of September. I tried to look like I was strict, professional.
I know the feeling.
teacher in mourning. But the last time I bought my favorite thing there was 2 years ago going to Europe, and I bought this wonderful dress that I wore everywhere in Europe, and I could unpack it and put it on, and it was perfect. And I think I have a few holes in it now, but it's still one of my favorite things to wear.
Yay.
So I'm coming back, of course, because I'm not working anymore. So my Johnny Was shirts, embroidered blouses, and things like that are still my favorite things.
So Barbara, how have you changed your fashion sense over the years?
You know, when I was a teenager, I decided I wanted to always look sexy.
Yeah.
And little cute mini skirts and dresses. You know, I was a girl with little heels on. Mm-hmm. And then I, you know, went to college and became blue jeans and sweaters and hippie clothes. And for a while, I thought all I was going to wear was Indian imports. Mm-hmm. And then when I could afford better clothes, I sewed for a long time. But when I was buying better clothes, I liked beautiful dresses. Mm-hmm. And I liked flowy things, and I liked things to dance in.
Mm-hmm.
So there were apropos had some beautiful dresses that I used to just adore, that off the shoulder and full skirts and, you know, just beautiful. So, I don't know. I'm very casual now. you know, comfortable sweats, comfortable stretchy jeans.
Mm-hmm.
Still love sweaters. And, you know, my main thing now is comfortable shoes. I never wear heels anymore.
Yes, you get to let those go. And also for all of your traveling, to have a dress that you can throw on, it always looks good. And a pair of comfortable shoes, you can go anywhere.
Exactly. And if you like traveling with just a carry-on like I do, then you want just two pairs of shoes. You know, don't mess around.
That's true. That is true. We probably at some point should do a show just about how to pack for a long journey, because I think that's an art form unto itself.
Really a good idea,
Barbara. Anyway, thank you, Laura and Natalie, for all your help and kindness. I love your store. I'll come see you soon.
So sweet.
Thanks for
calling.
Thank you, Barbara. Thank you, Barbara. Have a great day.
Yeah.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And that must feel very nice.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
What a sweet, sweet thing to hear. Mm-hmm. So lovely. Yeah.
Because I would imagine that through when things are tough in the economy or things have changed, that you would feel a little isolated. I mean, I would imagine getting feedback would be important.
Yeah, it's our local customers are our most treasured, you know, because they come in good times and bad times, and they're part of you know, our lives, and we, you know, hope to be part of theirs.
So what's it like being part of the downtown? Is it, because I don't know this number, but are there more women-owned stores downtown? Do you feel like you have a big community of women-owned stores? Or
I think there is. Mm-hmm. I don't know the statistic either, but I do feel like it's pretty high.
Is there a camaraderie between all the store owners?
Absolutely. Yeah. We're good friends with our next-door neighbor. And since they've had all the parking wars last year, I think a lot of the businesses got to know each other better, and which was something positive that came out of that.
Absolutely.
And, you know, local stores all kind of banded together, and we're all cheering for each other. You know, somebody comes in looking for something and you don't have it, we try to think of where to send them, and try to send them to our neighbor who's also our neighbor downtown, but also lives here in the community too. And that's what's so special about downtown.
So how old are your girls?
One is 16 and one is 14.
And so where do you see them in the next 10, 15 years? Do you think that family business will go a third generation?
Yeah, maybe my younger daughter, but I want them to find what makes them happy.
Yeah.
And so there's no pressure.
In case she's listening, there's no pressure.
Yeah.
And so the world of fashion, what I've been reading a lot about, I'm sure it's not new to you, but the idea of fast fashion, and you know, on Instagram you see all these things pop up all the time. What is fast fashion, and why is it not a good thing?
Yeah.
Well, it's really, really bad for the environment. It takes 60 gallons of water to make one T-shirt. And if you think about that, and then you think about wearing it a few times because it only cost you $5 and you can throw it away, that's pretty sick, you know?
Yeah.
Think about the all the natural resources we have to use to produce that T-shirt. It's just wrong on every level.
And why did fast fashion become so popular?
I think it's trends just in the economy. The machine of, you know, trying to constantly be consuming and, you know, keep the profit going. And I don't know enough, but that would be what I would guess to keep, you know, it's a trend and you've got to buy it this season. And then a couple months later, you've got to buy this one. And so then the fast fashion is done cheaply and then it's inexpensive. So then
it wears
most
out.
Most people can afford to have it not last, and which is really not good for really anyone, other than I guess the company making the profit. But I think it's really important to think about that and think about the clothes that you buy and where are they coming from, and you know what goes into that. And
does the United States hold a corner on fast fashion? Or is it coming
overseas? I mean, it's produced overseas.
Mm-hmm.
There is a market of clothing made, a lot of it made in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
There is, you know, still American made clothing, but the fabric is still going to be probably made overseas. You know what I mean?
And then what happens? I can only imagine with all of the fast fashion that's pitched out. It's in.
Probably going in the landfill.
In the landfill, right.
It's really
it's
sad.
It's not recycled, really.
They ship it to other countries, too. It's really sad.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
garbage itself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what's the alternative? What do you see in the future? What does sustainable clothing look like? Is it different fabrics or?
Well, we really like natural fabrics. A lot of our customers really like natural fabric. Fabrics.
And so we're talking about cotton and bamboo.
Cotton, linen. Yeah, rayon is actually a natural.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Actually, yeah, one of the oldest fabrics, and it's made from a wood pulp. And
really?
So, yeah, rayon, lyocell.
Yay,
tencel.
Rayon.
Mm-hmm. It's heavily processed. But it is natural. Buying clothing that is going to last you for years is important because then it, you know, you're not having to replace it, and that's good for a lot of reasons.
What is that? What makes something sustainable fashion as opposed to fast fashion? How would someone even know what they were purchasing?
Well, the quality of something and the brand. Maybe you get to know the brand and why. Like, there's a brand that we buy called Cut Loose that's made in San Francisco, and it's all natural for the most part, and it is made in San Francisco, and it's lasts. It machine wash, tumble dry. Probably looking at like how you can wash it can help you. But getting to know brands that you know hold up, asking the person that you're buying it from, can you tell me who made this? Mm-hmm. You know, why is it this price?
Mm-hmm.
And they should be able to tell you why is this more expensive than the shirt at Walmart or wherever. That's an important thing, I think. And I see that. I think a lot of, you know, the younger generations are starting to recognize that.
Yeah. I mean, we thrift stored like mad when we were kids.
Well, and that's so popular
and that's a
now.
Big trend
it's a
right
huge
now,
trend,
too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is great.
It's great.
Recycling things and finding new life and
it's wonderful. Yeah.
Absolutely.
My complaint with fast fashion is that our kids will miss out on the vintage stores that we had, right? Because we could buy clothes from the 50s when I went to college that still looked like it hadn't been worn.
Right.
But I wouldn't imagine there's going to be vintage fast fashion.
Right. Will there be? I know.
Right?
I never thought about that. That is a great point.
The whole vintage market will die.
It will.
Because
its own death. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so in our last minute, what is your hope for the next few years? Where do you see yourself in the next few years?
Well, I hope to still be downtown and going along. We're going on our, is it 23 years of wow. being downtown at Apropos, and even longer from up your alley.
Yeah, we hope
so
to still
be
around.
We hope to be there for a few
it's
years.
It's been a tough yeah. go since the pandemic hit, and yes. then the parking wars, and now other things, and it's yeah. just very rocky world right now, and yeah. I'm sure everyone understands that. Yeah. We're hoping we'll survive it.
For all family businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Pretty
and
tough.
For businesses in general.
Pretty tough.
I want to thank you both for coming in and spending this hour
thank
with me.
You. Thank you, Elizabeth. It was such a pleasure. I beyond the tears, I can't thank you enough.
Yeah, we're so lucky to have you in our community.
Mm-hmm. We are.
You.
What a blessing you are.
I appreciate you both. Well, yeah. I just, as I've told you at the beginning of the show, Laura, you are a part of my life's history and story, and I appreciate you and knowing that you're there. And I love that you're woman-owned and your family business, and you're modeling that for your daughters in Women's History Month to kind of continue that leadership is so important. Because, again, it goes unsung quite often because we're busy also doing the laundry and driving everyone to dance practice and doing everything else. So I wanted to honor you as businesswomen as well. This has been A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Find me on Facebook or on Instagram. Send me a message there. Listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or podcast our show. But as always, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for supporting this community and Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.